Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. On the gorgeous sofa, proverbially speaking, today we have Isabel Costello, who is going to be speaking about, among other things, her second novel, Scent. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, Donna. It's really wonderful to be here.
Could you, first of all, introduce us to the story of Scent?
Well, Scent is very much the personal story of a woman named Clémentine, a French woman, who we see at different points in her life. So in the main story, set in Paris, she's 46 years old and is confronting many of the issues that women do face in that turbulent part of life. Declining marriage, last kid has left home, and she works as a perfumer, which has always been a great passion in her life, and even that's kind of heading south. And then, just when it looks like things are really quite difficult enough, somebody from her distant past resurfaces completely unexpectedly. And this brings us to the earlier part of the novel, set in the early 90s in Provence, where Clémentine, the young Clémentine, age 20, got involved with not only another 20-year-old woman, but a 25-year-old man. So it was not a classic love triangle, although the two girls were originally just involved with Ludo, the guy, but they actually get more into each other.
And that sets the scene. I liked how you said going south, because it is to the south of France where Clémentine grew up. Clémentine's origins and the Provence that she's from are very different from the sort of lavender fields and sun-soaked Provençal images that we're used to. It's more Marseille, you know, of the Depardieu series, if anyone's seen that, than it is, you know, Aix-en-Provence of that era. Tell me a little bit about that, because I think you have that to me was very much part of the background, part of the base sense, if you will, of the book.
I'm really glad you picked up on that, because France is a country I've known incredibly well all my life. It's been a great joy and a big part of me, it wouldn't be too strong to say. And perhaps that's why I kind of really feel moved to try and convey it as a real place. I mean, both the locations of both the settings of this novel, Paris and Provence, have a kind of iconic, mythically beautiful reputation, kind of bordering on cliche. Provence, this is the first time I've written about the south of France, the place which, you know, no offence to Paris, occupies the greatest, you know, part of my heart. I absolutely love it, and very deeply. And for all the obvious reasons, I mean, you know, I love lavender fields, gorgeous sunshine and olives and the sea as much as the next person. That's not enough to sustain my interest when I'm writing a novel or when I'm writing character. You know, I'm always interested by how complicated things and places and people are. And so Clémentine grew up in the Luberon, which is an area that I've been to many, many times, almost like drawn back there obsessively over the last 22 years or so. There's part of the book is also, or rather an important scene of the book is set on the coast down in the Calanque, on this magnificent rugged coastline next to Marseille. And Russia, the other woman who Clémentine becomes involved with in a way that affects her entire life, regardless of whether she'd reappeared, actually. Russia is a woman of Algerian descent who is from the Quartier Nord, which are in fact depicted in the series Marseille, which I was absolutely glued to. And it's a book in which encounters between people of different origins and backgrounds is quite fundamental, because I think a lot of the energy of story comes from that kind of discovery, and the way which, you know, leaving aside all the kind of, you know, complicated sexual and romantic stuff that goes on between the two women, you know, they encounter each other's culture, and it's a kind of something which kind of animates their relationship and which becomes part of Clémentine's worldview. I mean, when we see her in the main present day story, before she knows Rash is going to reappear, it's already clear that, you know, her, you know, it's broadened her mind in the way that, you know, actually meeting people from different backgrounds and ethnicities, etc., does. You know, when we see people as people, not kind of an amorphous mass.
Clémentine, by dint of being French by origin, pretty, and having thankfully an aunt in Grasse, she was able to shake off those things in a way that Rasha, being Algerian or pied noir or whatever it is, you know, from the South, cannot. She cannot move on in a way that Clémentine can. The title Scent, that an idea of yourself, sort of without noticing, an outward idea of yourself sort of accretes on your skin and becomes a carapace, almost like droplets of scent. And she, from the outside, she is living this very upper middle class life. She's a very successful perfumer. And yet she doesn't see that herself until she has to, that she's living this interior life, but then that carapace has accreted and has become brittle. And she's sort of inside that. I thought that was so interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, this kind of points very directly to one of my big interests as a writer, and possibly even the fundamental reason I started writing, is my interest in the kind of, you know, interior life. And my conviction that, you know, what's visible of us to others is just, you know, really the tip of the iceberg. And, you know, we all have to kind of put on such a kind of facade, you know, for all sorts of reasons, for social acceptability, for, you know, career progression, and, you know, to try and achieve the things we think we want from life. And, you know, most of us are hiding a lot of vulnerability and, you know, all sorts of aspects of ourselves, which I'm very, very interested in, and which I think readers are interested in. So I think this is one of the reasons I write in the first person. So, you know, my narratives are very kind of, you know, intimate, female centric. And the first person voice as a novelist, you know, it has pros and cons. The character is there in every scene. You're in their head every minute of the day. I mean, apart from when another character is speaking out loud. You know, so it calls for an incredible degree of exposure and a lack of filter, I think, if you're going to exploit the possibilities of that viewpoint. Because if not, then frankly, in my opinion, leave it alone and just write it another way. So we do, I think, discover an awful lot about Clémentine that nobody would have a clue about, just from, and you know, she's forced to confront the enormous gulf, this ravine really, between who she really is and who she's in sort of passing. I mean, at one point she actually refers to her marriage as this show we're putting on. You know, so she realizes, you know, she kind of knows she's doing it, which is probably more than most people do, actually.
What cost does that have for you as a writer, but also the person writing in that way? Because that filterless sort of channeling of someone, and as you say, they're in every scene. But I imagine it's difficult to get any sort of distance yourself.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of writing, it does call for a certain amount of courage, I have to say. You know, it's often the bits where I kind of write a scene and I get this kind of like, you know, sort of a almost like a prickling that's kind of pulls in two different directions. There's a bit of me that goes, you can't possibly say that. And there's the other bit that's kind of like excited and thinking, you absolutely have to say that.
Another one of the layers of this book are those very sort of chain-like and chain reaction-like relationships. Mother, daughter, you know, is another strand of this book, and maybe the middle note of the full scent.
Yeah. That's sometimes called the heart note. And I think that's a very, very nice observation. I like that. Yes, I mean, family is an endlessly fascinating subject to me. And mothers and daughters in particular. But also the kind of intergenerational kind of nature of, you know, the way we either replicate or reject our own upbringing in the way we, I mean, I didn't have the easiest relationship with my late mother. And, part of me is quite glad that I have two sons, because it's just completely different. Yes, Clémentine has a son and a daughter, and her, you know, relationships with both of them, especially her son Bastien, because he's the youngest child and he's the one who's just left. So this is the moment that many women experience, where they're suddenly like looking at their husband across the table. Although in fact, Clémentine and Edouard don't even sit down at a table together. So in that sense, the balcony in their apartment is a very kind of, I'm sure people are going to say the balcony is a character in a book, because I mean, in my mind, the balcony is practically a character in the book. So things happen out on this balcony that couldn't happen anywhere else.
The current story in Paris is against the background of the Bataclan bombings and Charlie Hebdo. And that's a change of perception from the south of France that they grew up in. There was, yes, a heightened perception in Marseille, and it has always had that North African flavor. And that's been part of Marseille since Middle Ages. And yet it had changed in that time. And another thing that's changed and is dealt with differently is sexuality. And so Bastien's homosexuality is dealt with very differently. And the possibilities for him are very different than they were for her as a young woman. So just talk to me a little bit about that, because I always imagine, you know, when someone asks me about, you know, feminism now, you know, I'm middle-aged. It is different. I grew up in a different world than young women are in today. What happened to us in rooms, the things we confronted, and then how we chose to or had to deal with them, are very different situations than would arise now. So the Me Too of today is very different from the Me Too when I was 20 and the situation we were in. And I think it's the same. I mean, I don't think Bastien would have the same problems or did as his mother.
Yes, well, I mean, unlike his mom, Clémentine, Bastien is just kind of just very, has a very strong and almost unshakable sense of himself and his sexuality. Other people may have attitudes about it, but I mean, he is just proud and happy to be himself. And obviously this doesn't mean that his experience as a young gay man in Paris is, smooth or without, difficulty. He has suffered, real nasty experiences because of that. I think there's a much more kind of flexible attitude and acceptance of differences in sexuality, gender, that kind of thing these days, which, I mean, I think is only to be welcomed. I mean, human sexuality, and especially that of women, is a kind of, you know, major, major interest of mine. And I mean, I choose to write novels about things almost as an excuse to think about things which I'm really interested in and, you know, spend time finding out more about them. And I've, yeah, there's a huge amount of, you know, fascinating nonfiction and personal testimony material out there. And there are many studies have showed that, you know, sexuality is much more fluid, you know, especially that of women, than was previously assumed to be the case. And also the very kind of interesting and quite confusing mismatch often between people's stated sexual identity, their attractions, and their sexual behavior. So for example, one in four heterosexual women have had some kind of same-sex encounter. One in four women who are straight, you know, who think they're straight or say that they're straight. I mean, I think my subconscious was kind of holding up a bit of a board to me when I chose to, women often experience their sexuality as more fluid as we get older as well. And that's undoubtedly been the case for me, and something that I've come to understand more about myself.
Yeah.
In writing this book.
There are points of potential menace and you know, danger and excitement. And that really, it's amazing that, like a fine perfume, that you've managed to hit all of those different notes, which is quite a feat.
Wow, gosh, I'm really thrilled. Thank you so much for saying that.
Talk to me about your evolution as a reader and a writer. Talk to me about that evolution and your blog and how you came to be published with your first book, Perry Mon Amour.
Well, I mean, I was always a very voracious reader as a child. And in my early teens, I devoured the entire oeuvre of Enid Blyton, despite quite a lot of snobbery surrounding that author. And then in my early teens, I read every single Agatha Christie novel and Judy Blume, obviously. And then I did a degree in French and German, which was predominantly literature. And that kind of like actually put me off reading, you know, for a good few years afterwards. I was just so sick of ripping things to pieces. And when I finally came to write approaching writing as a serious pursuit, I was 41 by then. And it got to the point where, you know, people had been hearing me say I wanted to write a novel for so long. And I didn't have a kind of big career that I was otherwise massively engaged in. I just sort of thought, you know, I can't keep making excuses if I'm going to do this thing, you know. I mean, other people have very, very valid reasons for not doing it until they're, you know, 60 or what have you. But, you know, that was the moment for me. And I did really throw myself into it. I did beginner's courses at City Lit, and I joined a workshop with some other writers. I did make some real headway in the sense that I got an agent within 5 years of starting. Which was, extremely fortunate. But we then didn't get a deal for that book, which was absolutely crushing and, you know, can happen. And that is kind of like the genesis of my of a project that I founded called Resilience for Writers with a psychologist friend. But anyway, I won't get into that or we'll be here all day. That was a very, very big fall to earth for me, you know, because I'd ended up with offers of representation from several agents, and it really looked like things were, you know, on the way. And then once I'd kind of, you know, got over it, which, you know, it was easier said than done, I just sort of thought, I've just got to write another novel. So anyway, I wrote Paris Mon Amour with a kind of fire burning, if you like. And then I got an ebook deal with a fantastic young company at the time. They've since, you know, gone on to great heights, called Canelo. We couldn't get a print deal for the book, but you know, we had ebook and audio. And you know, some people would have, you know, sort of said, oh, you know, that's not good enough for me. But I mean, that's not my attitude, and that's not how you get on. So I just sort of thought, well, you know, let's just take this and run with it. You know, I mean, it was a story that I really, really passionately believed in, that I believed people would relate to. And that was a good decision, because a fiction buyer from a major retailer got wind of the book and fell in love with it. And I ended up self-publishing that novel in paperback under my own Literary Sofa imprint. So my blog is The Literary Sofa. And it did very well, you know, on its own terms. I mean, we're not talking mega bestseller, but you know, it was so from there on in, it was only kind of you know, it made sense to write another novel set in France, because people had liked the first one. And I mean, I doubt if I will ever really, you know, deviate from this territory of mine, which is, you know, kind of older women, sex, relationships, you know. So the things that are really different about this book are the fact that I brought in the south of France, which was, again, only a matter of time, because I mean, I just love that place. I miss France so much. I mean, like, God, it's like I've had a limb ripped off.
I was going to ask you about that, because for you, more than most, I mean, because you live so much of your emotional life, obviously, you know, in France. How is that? How's this been for you?
Oh, it's been, yeah. I mean, obviously, people have far worse things to deal with, but yeah, I haven't been to France since August of 2019. It has a particular kind of a emotional wrench to it, because my mother was a French teacher, and her best friend is my French godmother, who's still with us. She's an absolute legend at 86. And my godmother's two daughters are my oldest and closest friends. So one slightly older than me and one slightly younger. And the younger one lives in Marseille, and I wrote a lot of scent down there. And my mother died after a long illness shortly after I was last in France, and my godmother didn't come to the funeral, and I was supposed to be going to go and see her this time last year. And so it has been, you know, more difficult than it would have been in other periods, I think. But I'm on FaceTime to my friend in Marseille like all the time. I mean, sometimes I just cry when she takes me out onto she's got this unbelievable balcony with like a view of the first Calanque and the sea. And I mean, she's like a sister to me and more. So, you know, and I miss things like, you know, French bookshops. I mean, I've read almost nothing in French in the last year, whereas normally, I mean, I think the year before, a third of my reading was in French. Anyway, you asked about the blog. So I've been running The Literary Sofa for nearly 10 years, which has been an absolute joy. And I started it when I was kind of like a wannabe writer, and everyone was going, well, you've got to have a blog. And I was like, really? You know, I looked at a few other writers' blogs, I thought, well, you know, okay, I suppose I could do that. And then very, very quickly, I was looking for an agent at the time. So I was going out and, like, you know, listening to lots of agents. And that's when I found out that proof copies were a thing, because, you know, just as an ordinary member of the reading public, I'd never seen finished books. So then, you know, this is before NetGalley, before you could get ebooks as a reviewer. So I started to be able to get my hands on, you know, books pre-publication. And the obvious thing to do, you know, somebody who just lives and breathes writing, I mean, you know, I also teach writing now. I am a writing mentor, book doctor, as we sometimes call it. And, you know, I mean, it's my life, you know. So supporting other writers on the blog, many of them debut authors. I've had the incredible pleasure of seeing many of my readers become published authors. And then I mean, a lot of the success of the blog is down to my incredible guests, really. I mean, you know, they do guest posts. Some of them are specifically about location because, you know, that's something I like so much as a reader. Yeah, I mean, it just kind of feels like putting something good out into the world. And I mean, written blogs are not, you know, I mean, they're not as popular as they used to be these days. Everything's kind of, I mean, actually with this book, I'm finding that, you know, the interest is all talk based rather than, I mean, I've been asked to write a few pieces, but that's kind of like not really where it's at anymore. I mean, I'm happy to do both, but I mean, on a regular basis, I think, you know, that the literary sofa is it exists in written form, and I've got no plans to change that.